for two aging mid-level Hollywood celebrities who think a podcast is a good idea and who ask the eternal question to fill the hole in their soul. Did we do it? Here they are, Cage and Kevin!
Here we go, Kyle. In 5, 4, 3...
All the leaves are brown and the sky is green. I've been for a walk on a winter's day. I'd be safe and warm if I was in LA.
So we are.
California dreaming on such a winter's day.
Yeah.
Take it.
Hey, buddy.
Oh, I wanted to ask you something.
What's that?
Oh, shoot, I forgot.
Did we do it? Did we do it? That's the question that we ask ourselves. Did we do it?
Today, in continuing with the tradition of inner circle guests, we have a very special friend. Oh, yeah.
Not to be confused with the famous one.
Yeah. We're starting inner circle softballs.
Wait, we've never had any famous.
Well, define fame.
Someone that would be recognized on the street.
Well, this guy might be recognized. You might be familiar with a little band named Tenacious D. No, it's not Jack. Everyone, just, it's
what?
Not Jack. Well, I say Tenacious D, and I think people think.
I'm out. Oh, there's no Jack.
One.
Who is it then?
One of the Tenacious D players, as you like to say. From the Bread and Puppet show, we've got someone
I think
who's
it's Bread and Puppet Theater.
Theater, yes. Bread and Puppet Theater.
Yeah.
We've got one of the players, the Tenacious D players, because let's not forget, Tenacious D, of course, one of the biggest bands in the world. However, steeped in the theatrical tradition.
Ladies
so we've brought in one of the players.
Living wise.
We've referenced him on the show many times.
Mm-hmm.
J.R. Reed plays Lee. He's also one of the founding members of the band Trainwreck. Plays Daryl Dama, the lead singer. He's also an actor.
And you might know him from his biggest commercial. What's his biggest commercial?
Well, he's been on quite a few. He did the Aflac. He did, remember, he was
the
in
duck.
The car. Yeah, he was in the car.
Yeah,
he also was in a really great Volkswagen commercial that ran during the Super Bowl, as I recall. Remember?
When you get a
remember?
Super Bowl ad, you have arrived, sir.
You
I
really
can't
have.
Wait to talk to him about that.
He was on the show Blackish television show. He did an episode of Alias with me back in the day. Yeah, like, my kids saw him, and they reference him as Uncle Goo Goo. Because they've known him since they were born. Yeah. And for some reason, his moniker has been Uncle Goo Goo. And when they saw Uncle Goo Goo, it was very exciting. You remember when you were a kid and you saw people that you knew on television shows? Or did that ever happen to you?
No. I'm from the Bay Area. We don't have to be players.
Did you meet any? Did you ever meet any celebrities when you were a kid or
nope,
send out?
Not one.
No.
No. See, I'm not from the LA culture. I actually remember my first autograph, and might have been my last, because I'm not a big autograph guy, but I remember I was going to the A's game.
Right.
And you know, we're sports guys.
Of course.
So, you know, it's a big deal. And then you're going to the game, and I'm like, you know, what am I, 9, 10, 11, something like total baseball age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know how that is. It's just the greatest thing.
You're going with your dad. Yeah. You're
going,
especially
bring
A's
your
Stadium. A's Stadium. It's
the worst.
It's
the
a little dangerous.
It was back in the multi-use stadium where you get football, baseball, soccer, and large concerts.
Yeah.
That's where they had the Days on the Green. Speaking of digressing, but Peter Frampton, Day on the Green. One of the great ones.
Of course. Spiker King plays a little Day on the Green, Peter Frampton. Nope. From the city.
Like I do. Let me hear you out there. So you bring your glove. You're a kid. You're going to the A's game. You bring your glove.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna catch a foul ball. You gotta be. You gotta be poised.
Sure.
And then I, you know, of course, you get there too, like 2 hours before the game.
Right.
Because it's that much fun.
Of course. You want to see some of the. You want to see some of the players warming up.
So then I get the wild hair, or I don't even think I do. I think I was such a shy boy. I think my dad said, "Hey, you know, go and go ask for an autograph." What? Yeah. And it was the scariest thing because, you know, pro baseball.
Of course.
And it didn't even matter who was out there, right? So I just the only guy I could get to, and he was kind of a bench kind of scrub guy, Billy Grabarkiewicz. Of course, I still remember his name.
Wow.
You remember Billy Grabarkiewicz?
I do not.
I guess you didn't look him up because I'm all players right are.
Billy, his what is it? Grabarkiewicz?
Grabarkiewicz. So it's a G.
I got him. He came up right away. He played for the Dodgers in 69, and then he was on the A's in 71. So you could have been 11.
Okay. So I was 11. Yeah. That was about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect baseball age. But
so you
probably
go
not
Billy
that interested in girls yet. Anyway, so I'm going down there. Just anybody. I don't even care. And then and there was a guy, a baseball. He was an A.
Yeah. Mr. Grabarkiewicz.
Hey there. Mr. Grabarkiewicz.
Yeah.
I don't even think I knew his name. Mm. But here was the part that changed my life. Well, first off, like I said, I think it was the first and last autograph I got. But I had my glove, of course. So he signed my glove.
Signed your glove, yeah.
And he signed the inside.
Oh.
But here was the great thing. He signed it because Grabarkiewicz is such a terrible. No, it's a great name. We love
him.
But
Billy G.
It's a lot of consonants. Okay. And he's had to spell it every single time he's told somebody. And it's just a long, crazy name. So what did he do? He signed it Billy G.
Yeah.
And then he put quotations in the G. And I'll never forget it. And then every time I've done a signature since, I've put KG and done quotations around it because
wow,
my signature. And
see, so really that's my that's my point. Like it had that meeting of somebody in entertainment for us, for most kids, is such a monumental moment. Do you, I took Eli, my youngest, to.
I remember everything, his name and.
Yeah, to the Dodger game.
Changed
the way that your professional career signing.
It changed my autograph.
Yeah, we went to the game and we were totally taken care of and hooked up and it was fantastic. And after the game, so we were down on the field in the dugout seats at Dodger Stadium. Thank you to the Dodgers for taking care of this for us. And by the way, one of our sponsors, Dodgers. Hey, you'll be happy to know that Billy Berkowitz is still with us. He's 75. But I was saying
he's 75.
Oh yeah, he went to we've got him in the Zoom waiting
room.
We've
got Billy Grabarkowitz. Billy,
hey, you remember
when you signed my glove?
I do. Good to see you again, kid.
Billy, you know, of course, it didn't mean anything to you, but you had such an effect on my young life. Now, when I sign my autograph, I also use quotations for my initials.
Is that right?
Thank you.
It's my honor. And scene.
And that's just some of the improv techniques you're going to get on our seminar. The Did We Do It weekend seminar we're having in Maui at the Four Seasons.
If you pop over to Patreon.com/DidWeDoIt.
Now listen. The more I hear about this Patreon, I think we're leaving some money on the table.
We're going to do it. So Curtis Granderson for the Dodgers came over and signed Eli's ball, and the wide eyes of an 11-year-old. I'll never forget it. And how excited.
Visa commercials? Remember the Visa? It was like, price of tickets? You probably got them comped. Price of popcorn? $300. Autograph the look on your daughter's face.
Priceless. The great Hank Aaron passed away today, and the call was made by when he broke Babe Ruth's home run record, 715.
Is that Vin Scully?
Vin Scully. Spiker, can you play that clip?
Spike.
Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. For baseball, what a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother.
Once again, a beautiful call. I mean, Vin Scully was the master at calling another master's home run.
Man, I'm gonna be murdered by every Dodger fan. It wasn't my favorite announcer.
Vinny Scully?
I know he's an icon.
Yeah.
I know he's an icon, but there was something he didn't... It didn't sound human to me then. It sounded like someone had programmed a computer to. And you know what? He was great at that. Whatever. I mean, and I know I can't even imagine how hard it would be to just. And he spun stories till the cows came
stories,
home.
Sure.
And he had a million, and he was great. But I don't know. There was something about his voice, and it just kept.
Imagine the pressure, and you know pressure playing at festivals.
I don't think he had any pressure. I think
no, but imagine the pressure of the moment, the Kirk Gibson game one, 1988, the way that he crafted in a year of the improbable, the impossible has happened. To come up with that line in that moment when Kirk Gibson, who is limping out of the dugout, wasn't supposed to play, hits a home run to beat your A's in game one of the 1988 World Series. I was at the game with my dad. I will always remember that moment.
You know what? That is such a classic moment that, it was against my team. And it was so great that I had to just doff the cap. And it still is my favorite World Series moment. God, we've gone so sports right now.
Well, yeah.
We've gone inside baseball. Well,
you know what? That really does.
Hashtag.
I think the fact that we've gone sports aligns with our podcast platform host, Believe. Do you believe in love after love? We've got three guys. We've got Bron. We've got
Bron's the dude.
Who
Carter's the tech.
Carter, he's our tech, but he also is kind of a great sound mixer, and he has his
right
graduate degree.
I didn't mean to diminish. I know that sounded diminishing, but I meant like,
well,
he's the guy.
He's a great guy, Carter, if you're listening. And then, well, you will be because you have to mix this. And then we've got Cam, who does our social media.
Cam.
So we love our guys over at Believe. Yeah. Believe. Yeah, yeah. So if anybody's listening to this, follow Believe on Instagram. And did we do it? _ did we do it? _
Carter and Cam, but don't forget Brown. They're all on board. They're all. Wow, I don't have a good rap though.
No, give it another try. Take two. You got it in there. You got it. All right. Give it a little zhuzh.
Oh, yeah.
You're going ballad. You are a balladeer, one of the great balladeers.
Carter and Brown, don't forget Cam. I don't have anything.
That was good.
Yeah,
that's all you need. A little taste. That one is called "Don't Forget Cam." Can I talk about some of your side projects?
I guess that's what we do on. Did we do it?
Well, can we play some of the stuff you've been sending me?
All right, Johnny. Oh yeah, I do. I do send you stuff, don't I? Yeah. What was blowing your mind? I send.
Well, let me just say that it's authenticity that's blowing my mind. You're reaching a point in your playing and your singing. I'm not sure if you know Jerry Garcia, one of my favorite musicians from a little band called the Grateful Dead. Have I mentioned them before to you? As he got later in his career and his life, and there's others who kind of have followed the same path. There's just a vulnerability. Johnny Cash, you know what I mean? When he did that album with Rick Rubin, there's something that you tap into, I think, when you've been playing for a number of years, over 10,000 hours, maybe 20,000 hours. You've been on stage, you've traveled the world, you have nothing to prove. And now you're not, you know, you used to play for, you used to play for silver. Now you play for life. You know what I mean? And I hear it in the music. You've got a side project with the great John C. Reilly. Name drop, but not for me, for you. Wow. I mean,
Hold on. Pick it up. You know, that's
called Day Job. Can we play that? Can we play a Day Job song?
I guess so. You know what? Day Job has not had much exposure. We've never played a gig. We've never recorded a song, but and yet we are one of the most talked about side projects. Johnny, you have a little iPhone collab that John C. and I did.
Fantastic.
Go ahead, yeah, play it.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and staring. I don't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the old north wind, sailing on summer breeze, skipping over the ocean.
Kind of the outlaw, country stars, the Merle Haggards, the Waylon Jennings. Those guys are singing about real life. That's a great song.
John sent me.
Who wrote that?
Just a little. That was Harry Nilsson.
Harry Nilsson. Yeah.
No, you know what? He didn't write that, but he performed it. That's a great story. If you don't know, the great Harry Nilsson, songwriter, the Beatles' favorite. Yeah, the Beatles' favorite band, they'd say. It was kind of a funny thing. Who's your favorite American band? And they'd say
Harry Nilsson. Hello, Kyle, it's Ringo. What do you mean? After March 1st, Kyle, I will not sign any packages or fan mail. Do
you
not
sign,
sign
one more for my niece.
No, who only has no three nieces, days to live. Uncles, cousins.
But people just love you. You're the Shakespearean clown of
peace and love, Kyle. After March 31st, I will sign no more packages. Peace and love, peace and love. Harry Nilsson is my favorite band.
I loved how that was great. How you finally got there to that, but it's also I like how you weaponized peace and love too. Completely
peace
blind.
And love, peace and love.
Get out of my face! I'm giving you what you want.
It justifies his refusing to sign anything. And by the way, I didn't make that up. That is the great Ringo Starr's moniker. He will not sign any packages after this date. Do not. It will be tossed, Kyle. It will be tossed.
What's
by the way, does he recycle? Does he recycle the stuff, or is it just tossed in the recycling bin if it's recyclable? He didn't say that part, but he did say the tossed. Wait, so Harry Nilsson.
Yeah.
Harry Nilsson, who died in 1994. Yeah. He did not write the song Midnight Cowboy from Midnight Cowboy, the great movie with Dustin Hoffman. And
that was written by Freddie Neal, I believe. Am I right?
Everybody's talking. He wrote the song One by Three Dog Night, which became a number one, a top 10 song.
Yes. I was going to say, Kevin, I am a pop encyclopedic.
Give me a little One. Do you know how to play that one?
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as sad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. But it is ironic. And let me continue with the story, because they did ask Harry to write the theme of the great Midnight Cowboy. And I think he did write one. And they're like, what about this one?
Yeah.
And then they went, what if you sing that one? But it was also great. Like, sure, I'll do it. And of course, it ended up being the best thing.
Dustin Hoffman walking, you know, across the street. It's a legendary moment. Like, I'm walking here. And as a young actor, I knew that had to be an improvised moment. Do you know what I mean? It seemed too organic. It rang so true, and it really affected me. Like, wow, that seems to be what acting is, which is just reacting to the moment. And I was really taken, you know, by that. Yeah. So that's a great version of Everybody's Talking that you and Jerry McCracken from Trainwreck, aka John Riley, sang, man. It's got some real depth. And then you also sent me something recently with one of your friends. That and now my friend, the great Steve Lukather.
That's right, Steve. Well, first off, Steve's just, you know, he's a straight up legend. And, you know, growing up as a guitar player, I was a geek and I would subscribe to Guitar Player magazine.
Sure.
Way back in the 70s. And I keep them, you know, because there's valuable information that you need to glean from there. But I'll never forget. I mean, I think he was on the cover more than once because he's just a legendary guitar slinger. And he was a studio legend and Toto and all that. So growing up, he was just, you know, I'd see him on the magazine. He's just a icon in my brain. So fast forward.
Toto, by the way, I know you mentioned it, but people don't know who's in the band Toto. The great, he wrote the great song Africa, and he was also he did the guitar song.
He wrote that one, but you know, details. That's right. Quite a bit. I think it was David Paich. I think
he also played the guitar solo on Billie Jean. I'm just saying,
Johnny, go ahead and play Billie Jean. No, he that is Alex Eddie Van Halen, the late great Eddie Van Halen
solo. And then
Luke, as you know, is the tight compadres. Come Luke.
Yeah,
he did the rhythm. Part on that.
He did the rhythm.
Why would I have me do it, Johnny? I'm going to cue that up.
Cut to, by the way, the legendary, I want to get back to your guitar magazine 1970s, but you had a legendary lunch with the late great Eddie Van Halen and the Steve Luke Lukather at Arts Deli.
Studio City, yep. Now, I mean, it was already kind of a mind blower for me, just a fanboy. But now in the rearview mirror, we lost Eddie not long after that. It's just like, oh my God, I never thought I'd even, you know, meet Eddie, much less hang with him. And then
I'm sure he was happy to meet you. Do you remember him saying anything about, did you guys talk shop? Sure, or
wasn't that excited to meet me? And I'm pretty sure he pretended to know, maybe that
he knows the D. Come on, he knew the D. Who doesn't know the D? Did you guys talk any guitar shop or more just about sandwiches?
No. He actually, that was one of the takeaways, and not really, not sad, but he was over it. And I understand, you know, when you spend most of your life playing guitar and as you grow older, I think it just didn't hold the same fascination. You know, he's Eddie and he does his thing and people love it, but it's not like he's sort of that part of his life. In fact, one moment he mentioned that he hadn't even picked up the guitar in a couple of years.
Wow. But
and
still,
it's a great, just kind of soothing thing to do.
Yeah,
just by yourself for me, but he wasn't like that, and he just, you know.
I want to get to one other quick thing. So, speaking of Guitar Man, so you've got your great friend Steve Lukather, and we went to see Luke play with the great Ringo Starr at the Greek Theater. We had a great time. We went backstage and you were celebrated.
So wait, we did a Harry Shearer was doing a big concert with guest stars for his solo record, Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap.
Sure.
And he invited us to do a Spinal Tap song, which was quite an honor because, you know, of course, we're huge fans. And then we were down there and it was an all-star lineup. And Luke, of course, was one of the guitar players. And then we're just as it is, we were hanging backstage and he was a big fan. And I think his son was like even a bigger fan. And sure. I think there was a cool dad.
You want to impress the kid. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, yeah. So, but it was great. He's a pretty funny guy. We hit it off and
it's now always, you started a side project. And now you played this, you sent me this great version of
Guitar Man,
which I love it.
David Gates. Yeah. Song. You like that song? It's always been a favorite of mine.
Well, it just, again, it seems rooted in some sort of emotional truth. You know, it's like, oh God, like this guy needs to play to survive. And by the way, how appropriate for the time that we're living in. It's a parable for our times. I mean, musicians are shuttled during the pando. Not only can they not make any money that, you know, at their craft, but they can't play with other musicians. That's why, by the way, there's a great organization called Music Cares, which I suggest people check out on Instagram, which you can donate to help not only musicians, but roadies, of which I know you guys are a big fan of. Let's back and play a little song called Roadies.
You up, Roadie? Roadies.
No, I am the roadie. Lonesome warrior searching for a soul. No, I am the roadie. I make the rock go.
Smaller venues here in LA. We have venues like the Troubadour, the Viper Room, the Roxy that do need financial assistance to stay alive until we get back on our feet. And these vaccines, you know, get us back to hearing live music. And by the way, send us a message on _did_we_do_it_ on Instagram and let me know what you think of Kyle's work on this, because if you agree with me that it is absolutely grounded in emotional pathos. Is it pathos or pathos? I think it's pathos.
I say pathos, but yeah. you say potato, I say pathos.
It's just great, man. I'm really proud of you. I think it's really good. And also just reach out and say hi and let us know if there's, you know, what
should
you're
liking. Should they like or subscribe? Or should they just
getting
subscribe?
A lot. You should like and subscribe over at Apple Podcasts.
Both. What if they just liked and didn't subscribe? Would that be okay?
I mean, it's not great.
Right. Be honest with you.
Yeah. But we're coming out of the gate strong. We've loved the feedback so far. We appreciate all of you listening.
What if, you know, I am making a point of not reading or listening to any feedback. Well, how has it been out there?
Dude, I only look at it like maybe 67 times a day. So... No, the reaction's been great. We have a lot of great 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. So
how many are possible?
Five out of five.
Five out of five.
We've had no 4.5s yet. I don't think that.
Have you heard about fours? Has anyone from outside these borders, outside these shores?
Yeah, we had somebody reach out on our Instagram from the UK.
No,
and say, "Hello, mate, we're loving it out here." By the way, I'm not sure that's what he
said. Did you talk
about.
To him?
No, it was a message, but I'm transcribing it. I'm like, "We're loving the podcast. Can't wait for this for the next one." Thank you, Kyle and Kevin. Well,
was he in a pub at the time?
He was hammered.
Because I know
that. Everybody listen to Kyle and Kevin. All the way we do it. Here we do it.
Yeah, he was a mess.
Kyle, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Are you looking for shoes?
Oh, I love shoes.
Sure. More specifically, are you looking for a fresh pair of sneakers, kicks?
Well, I like sneakers, but I'm kind of into the vintage, retro, classic designs.
Really? Rare sneakers?
Yeah, it's kind of a thing.
Well, I know where you can find them.
What?
eBay.
What? eBay?
That's right. eBay. Whether rare, dead stock, or the latest release, you can find the exact shoe you're looking for at ebay.com/sneakers today. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators will verify the box, the logo, the stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair that you, Kyle Gass, have been eyeing. And it also protects sellers with a verified return process. Give us a little jingle jangle for eBay.
eBay, they're coming through on eBay. Man, they're gonna get your shoes for you.
Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. Dude, that was our first ad.
All right, now I know we got it.
Draws the crowd and plays so loud, baby, it's the guitar man. Who's gonna steal the show? You know, baby, it's the guitar man. He can make you love, he can make you cry. He will bring you down, then he'll get you high. Something keeps him going. Man, who's on the radio? You go and listen to the guitar man. Then he comes to town.
It's funny, I just checked our Instagram underscore. Did we do it underscore? And I just want to give a shout out to Ricky Damasceno from Brazil.
What?
Says, way to go, KG. Loving the podcast. Greetings from Brazil.
Oh my gosh.
All right. It's exciting. We've got J.R. Reed, a.k.a. Lee. Should I admit him?
I don't see him. Let the man in, for God's sake. Here he comes. Why are you denying him entrance?
Ladies and gentlemen, where is he? I see the box.
Oh, God.
There he is. Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you were frozen. Here he is. J.R. Reed wearing a Lakers hat. Go Lakers!
We're the best team in the league. Who's the last night when we beat the Rocky? We're the best team in the league. Rock!
There was an actor.
JR in Bull Durham?
He was not. But there was he was too young. There was an actor who played Nuke Lelouch in that film named Timothy Robbins, who started a company called the Actors Gang. And is that how you two met? What is the origin story of KG and JR Reed?
I was trying to rack my cabeza, which has a lot of memory issues.
You and I, JR, met at UCLA. You're 2 years ahead of me.
Yes, I remember. I do remember. We crossed paths.
Were you guys at the same trajectory, like a year? Where were you?
No, he was like 3 years behind me. I was young from 87 to 91.
I arrived in 90. But remember, Kyle, I've said in before, like I was one of the only freshman actors to kind of start to work within the structure of the theater department, some main stage.
Here it comes again. Yes, Kevin, you did very well.
I'm not, thank you. That's
yes. For everyone who didn't know,
can we roll?
Kevin was great all of his whole life.
No, Spiker, can we roll my credits, my UCLA credits?
Do we have a Kevin's IMDb?
Romeo and Juliet.
I wasn't in that. However, in my point is I met an actor in a play called King of Infinite Space, which was a parable about an out of control king.
Well, hello. I love an actor. Uh-huh. You're doing hello. A play.
So I met Steve Chabon, whose brother is Michael Chabon, the Pulitzer Prize winning.
I pronounce it Chabon. Am I wrong there?
It's actually Chabon.
Here's the thing.
Is it Chabon? I mean, I'll stand corrected.
Here's the thing that we can out him right now. Because it was Chabon.
Oh, and he was going
until college. And then his brother, Michael, went by
Chabon.
Chabon.
Yeah. Well, also because Steve said he was made fun of as a kid when they would say, ding dong, Chabon calling. Man. As opposed to Avon.
Well,
it's going to be traumatic. So anyway, I met Steve and then... Yeah. Steve was roommates with JR, and he was this hulking presence in an apartment in the Palms district of LA, always kind of lifting weights in the corner. And look at that. Look at the guns. He's still lifting weights.
It was larger back then, I think.
And you had a motorcycle. I was like, look at this guy. Being a Jewish kid from Encino, I don't know people like this.
Crazy long blonde hair, I remember.
Long blonde hair, yeah.
That's what I noticed right
now. Coming back, the mullet's coming back.
Dude, get it back, for God's sake.
Anyways, you were quite prolific and successful in the theater department at UCLA. So that's how I met. But what is your connection there?
So, yeah, I racked my brain. I can't remember the very instance that I met Kyle, but I know the very instance I witnessed Kyle, that I saw him, and that was in Freaks at the Tiffany Theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That Jack drug me to. That was the first Actors Gang show I saw, very first.
Oh, that was it.
Tiffany is no longer.
Did you do, what was the Brecht workshop?
Good Woman of Szechuan.
I think that's where we met. But I do remember, actually, I remember JR was speaking up and it's like, this guy was some crazy, funny, like Viking or something. Sort of
from Las Vegas. Guy.
And I was like, I swear to you, I was like, I want some of that. I like what's going on over there. And I actually, it was one of those, like, I cultivated the friendship with JR.
He
always had weed, too. I was like, wait a minute.
He was
this guy's a Viking. He's crazy and funny. And he's always got weed.
And he's always holding.
It's like, wait a minute, it's a slam dunk. And he's in the theater.
Well, perhaps that's why I got one of my famous or infamous nicknames, Kato Cha. Kato is from Kato Kaelin. And that's because I have a lot of really famous friends, and yet I'm still living in the back house.
So wait, so you knew Jack at UCLA. Jack brought you to this play at the Tiffany Theater on Sunset Boulevard. Yeah.
Quick side story on Jack, my inner knowing Jack. We had our very first class together, which was 10
Yes. That was theater history, I think.
So Jack and I had a class together, and we had the lab together, you know, where they broke it into the small groups. So I was in his small group, and I'll never forget the first time we started talking about a play, and Jack started talking, and I was like, who is this jackass? And what does he think he's doing speaking up about Agamemnon in such a way? But it's very interesting. But he stood out like a freaking bright tack. Like, it was just like, who is this guy?
What do you mean? He was denouncing the great Agamemnon?
No, he just had some strong words about the play. And I was like, who is this guy?
You were adversaries. You were adversaries to begin with.
Not even adversaries. No, I was just kind of like, who is this guy? But then, you know, I as I got to know him, and he blossomed around me.
We started going bowling, too.
The bowling nights, remember, Friday nights, Holly Star had, Lanes.
Yeah.
Hollywood, California. It's not there anymore. It's where they filmed The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. It was quite the social.
Every Friday night, it was from like 10 p.m. midnight to 1 a.m.
No, it was midnight. It was
midnight even?
Yeah, I know. It was midnight.
Like 2 a.m.? Oh, yeah. We took it into the much.
That's when you could, when we were that age, the midnight didn't seem late.
You started at midnight.
Like when we played Ultimate Frisbee, the Ultimate Frisbee games always started at midnight, didn't they? Or 11:30?
They were late.
What were we doing at UCLA years episode later? With that was a game we had. I don't mean to name drop, but we had Riles, Jack, Eddie Vedder. Who else played in that game?
There's a dramatist named George Bagot, who did a workshop at the theater festival in, what year was that, Kyle?
Olympic Arts Festival in 1984, Jason.
1984.
Yeah, he did a little demonstration. And
this guy named Tim Robbins and his friend John Cusack took the class and fell in love with the style of George Bagot, which is a kind of punk rock commedia dell'arte.
It's mainly commedia. Yeah, it's based on the old Italian Renaissance.
Maybe the gang brought the punk rock into it.
And commedia is ostensibly archetypes and playing emotion.
Stock characters
and playing states, right? And so give us an example of like, what is a state and how do you achieve that state?
Well, part of the idea is that you
anger and fear.
In the reality of the heightened reality, you have to be in one of the four states.
So you would have these workshops where wouldn't Tim or whoever was kind of running the workshop say, you have to get to this state, and if you don't achieve it, you have to go back to the back of the line or something?
Yeah, they kick you off stage. You come on stage and you need to be in a state and the character, and you have to be believable and sincere or else you get what's called a phone call. And that's the phone's ringing in the back of the theater. You better go answer it, which is a nice way of saying get off stage.
Oh, it was really anti-art and anti-humanity. So,
and then in the chair
I would see Kyle not liking something like this. I could see you not wanting to embrace.
No, I was not alone. No, this thing.
Nobody liked it. It was like boot camp.
No, it was a way to make it some sort of combat or boot camp. Sport or something. It was like, no, it's not a sport. It's not a contact sport. It's not something where you're winning. It's about, you know, working together and you know, spitting some truths and doing some good theater. And I actually learned a lot from it, but I don't know. It was a bit oppressive for me.
If you're working on a play, you of course you use the characters of the play. But when you're just doing an actor's gang general workshop, you do the commedia characters, which are, there's like 12 of them. The stock
Which ones. Is in Commedia dell'arte.
Max, the servant, the lovers.
What's the main guy? What's the old guy?
Pantalone.
He's kind of the main, the patriarch.
He's the patriarch.
Exceptional greed and status at the top of the social order. Yes. Pantalone is money in the commedia world. And by the way, Kyle and I talk about status all the time, and that's, you know, It's status is the, I use the tool status all the time when trying to work on a character, like where in the context of this story does mm-hmm. this character's status lie? Is he trying to achieve status? Does he have
it's
status?
It's a signpost, my friend. That's a good signpost.
Right. So I think what you guys were doing at the gang was helpful, is what I'm saying, because this is, do you know what I mean?
Oh,
this
for
is,
sure.
For sure. Yeah. It was, there was a lot, but
no, I mean, the improv work alone is, you know, like,
well, that's what I was going to say for generating material, which JR did quite a few times and actually directed some great shows. For generating material, we'd improv in the style, and that would be pretty, sometimes be pretty productive.
I just want to say that I just stumbled on another character that called Il Capitano, a.k.a. Kyle Gass. Let's take a look at his characteristics. He is often a braggart and a swaggerer who can maintain his claims only by benefit of the fact that none of the locals know him.
Well, it's funny. That is my favorite character, by the way.
He's a well, we call you the captain in the poker games.
I know. Oh, that's right. That's true. Yeah.
Il Capitano.
Little did I know it was derogatory the whole time.
So two of the great shows, in my opinion, that I saw at the gang were two that JR created and directed. We've got Cool Cops. We've got Kick-Ass Militia. And we've got, what was the roller derby one?
World of Wrestling. And...
Well, World of Wrestling, starring Jon Favreau.
We've talked about Favs.
Jon Favreau was in World of Wrestling?
Jon Favreau and Kurt Ward were the main wrestlers.
Did you cast? Do you remember Jon's audition?
I remember him begging me to be in the show. I remember
that scene. So beneath, but he
oh, dude, it was a hot ticket.
Successful directors of all time. That's
incredible. I know, and he was begging me, and I direct. Isn't it crazy? I directed him.
Oh no!
And long story short, John doesn't like me very much because Kirk Ward, who played opposite him in the wrestling show, they did some real wrestling scenes. I had an actual wrestling ring. And it was, you know, this giant, it's called World of Wrestling. And we took societal archetypes and pitted them against one another, a la a Sunset Strip rocker versus a priest.
Mm.
And Jon Favreau played the priest. At the end of the last thing were these two mystery wrestlers that got into this giant, crazy, out of control wrestling match where one of them actually guts and pulls the innards out of the other wrestler.
Oh, dear.
In a black light.
When that happens.
Yeah. Scene. And it things got really weird and dark really quick after this huge comedy, crazy, wacky wrestling thing.
Yeah.
But leading up to that, they did real wrestling. I had them really bounce, you know, I had a real ring with real.
Let me guess. Kirk was kicking the shit out of him and John.
Kirk was kicking the shit out of him and Jon Favreau kept.
Yeah, I'm going with Favs on this one, by the way.
He kept asking me to give
safety, JR.
Safety first. Yeah. Both Kevin and I are on the same page.
Please tell Kirk to go easy.
Go easy.
Let's act. And I never gave him the note.
Why not call? Come on. I'm with Favs.
I'm with Favs too.
Because it was so good.
Here's the thing.
By the way,
JR, I didn't want to tell you, so but good. We've got Favs in the waiting room. He wants to talk to you.
Come on into the
About being in The Mandalorian. So, one of the great things I felt about your direction going to the shows at the Actors Gang space on Santa Monica Boulevard was when you showed up, like in Cool Cops, and what was the roller rink show? I asked that before.
Tag Team Love Fest 2000.
Tag Team Love Fest 2000, which you built a roller rink in the theater and had people.
A velodrome roller rink, yes.
So yeah, you had actual people that were skilled at roller skating.
Well, way before Glow and way before, what was the famous Broadway show? Starlight Express,
right?
Well, yeah. Well, Starlight Express was before us.
But way before Glow. You're right.
I was inspired by Starlight Express.
But even with Cool Cops, yeah. I remember we showed up to wait in line. We got our tickets, and then here come the actors. It was very immersive theater. I remember like Kirk Ward saying, I'm good. I'm going to need to frisk you, sir. And I'm like, okay, I'm into it. But I could tell some people were like, wait, what's going on? They don't want to be a part of the show. But that was part of the actors gang. But really, your style, I hadn't seen that at the theater until you kind of came along and really broke open the fourth wall.
Yes, I love the immersive experience. I love environmental theater. And yes, my shows always started at the door or before the door. I wanted things happening so that when people like came into the world, they were in it.
One more of your shows, which I think was quite, I'm going to say prescient and another college word, but Kick-Ass Militia.
Prescient.
Yes. Very topical. Yes, very topical.
Give us the log line of the show.
Basically, I'll tell you what inspired me about it first was what happened in Waco with the Branch Davidians.
Yeah.
That was what inspired me.
And Ruby Ridge.
And Ruby Ridge and the Freemen of Montana, if you remember them.
Yeah, if people don't know, Waco is widely known for the siege of the Branch Davidian compound in 1993 when agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms tried to arrest Branch Davidian leader David Koresh for stockpiling weapons and
David
explosives.
Koresh.
Sidelight, JR, you should play him because he was a rocker as well, I believe.
Yeah,
I think.
You could play him in the movie. Did they end up taking him down? Did they end up taking Koresh down, or did he kill himself?
Yes, he was killed.
Are you really saying that you don't remember the tanks rolling in and burning down the place?
Dude, they literally, the U.S. government literally flame torched the compound, and I think they were hoping they would run out. But
what year was that?
1993.
How old were you, Kevin? 93.
22. There you go.
You didn't care.
I was looking for babes.
You were looking for love
in all the wrong places.
Loving too many places.
We were both going with the same classic song.
Oh yeah, freewheeling. But that was a wild and woolly show.
Look at this play that I got out of my library.
Wait a minute, I was in that play.
Yes, you were. The Firebugs by Max Frisch. Which is a character named Gottlieb Biedermann. And I ended up taking over the lead role of Gottlieb Biedermann, which is about a German businessman who discovers that two men have entered his attic and are arsonists who have already burned down most of the time. Max Frisch was a writer, a German writer, and this was written, he was born in 1911. I think this was written right after World War II. Biedermann refuses to see the arsonist's collection of fuses, detonators, and barrels of gasoline as anything more than an elaborate practical joke. In the face of the obvious fact that his visitors threaten the home, Biedermann and his wife feed their enemies a sumptuous dinner and even provide them with all the matches they need in the vain hope of avoiding the inevitable. It was a stylized show that we just went Buffalo Nights full, almost in honor of the actors gang. And it was a parable about what's your quote that you always say? What's the quote? When they come for you.
Wait, what is it? Who will be there when they come for me? If I don't come for my neighbor or whatever.
Right. Who will be there when they come for me? And that was kind of what Max Frisch was writing, which was, hey, everybody turned a blind eye to the Nazis. We all knew they were there in Germany. However, we invited them into our homes and made them a sumptuous meal.
Yeah.
So
I played one of the Nazis.
JR played one of the arsonists. They were arsonists in the show, and you were fantastic. And what I remember, just to set up the story.
It's the best entrance of all time. I came through a trap door. I crawled under a dirty, musty theater stage like every night, and I got in position, and I came through a trap door.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Powerhouse Theater in Santa Monica, which is now a restaurant.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was an amazing – we have a photo. We have a great photo by Craig Schwartz, the great theater photographer, of JR coming up through the trap door with the orange firelights. Well, you have a copy of that?
I don't know where it is.
I have one. I can get you one. But Spiker, can we put that photo up on the website, please?
Thanks, Jenny.
Michael Palin.
No, wait
yeah,
a minute.
So
no,
wait a minute.
I think it started with Special Things. But I could be wrong. Go ahead.
That too, yeah, Special I mean, Thing. Here's the thing. Is I think saying Special Things, not just as JR, and I did Spider-Man, Cheap Ass Spidey. That was all happening. And then the HBO episodes happened, and Bob Odenkirk is responsible for Lee, calling him Lee. I think, or you guys were because
no,
you
I think saw. We did just for the rhyme. I think it was
yes. Lee funny, like, reminded with rhymed with Tenacious D. D and Lee.
And so every other word.
Easy part.
Lee, to make rhyme whatever.
Lee. That's it.
What was the show? There was a show at the House of Blues that Foo Fighters played and the D played, and I think I remember Spider-Man making an appearance in that show, which was a packed show at the House of Blues. What was that, a benefit? Do you remember that, Kyle? You guys played before Foo Fighters when the House of Blues was still around?
I do know, actually.
I just remember meeting Grohl. That was the first time I met Dr. G backstage.
Mm.
And he was very friendly. He was very like bouncy. Hey, man. Hey, man. I just remember him being very bouncy. Very friendly.
A bouncy dude. The HBO episode.
First, there's special things. Isn't that Special Things? Is the
yeah, Special
we
Things
did that
came
live.
First.
And it was like a live bit, wasn't it? Didn't we do that live?
Can we play Special Things, Spiker?
Yeah.
And then you would do. Spiker, oh, and then we do Lee. Things.
Special things, like when a friend gives a friend a helping hand, helps his little buddy to understand. That's a special thing, a very special thing. Yeah, take it, JB, to take it.
I hate to interrupt the thing that Lee was saying about him and KG. Special thing. What do you think this is? Tenacious D3D. No, 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 no. Like when KG hits a tin cup shot on a Genesis golf.
Tin cup.
That's a special thing. A special thing. Or when KG pops in Jenny Craig mac and cheese and hands it to me. That's a special thing.
That's a special thing. To this day, but his JR is most irreverent. And as he continued on in the train wreck tradition of just kind of some crazy wordplay and the like. And it's just a part of your vernacular. It's pretty fun. Pretty funny.
You're able to turn a phrase, you know, and kind of take a commonplace term and give it some special sauce. Give it a little sauce. A little sauce. Hey, it's Rosie Perez. It's Rosie Perez, Kyle. Give it a little sauce.
In every poker game, he'd sing at least 5 to 15 times. Don't turn around. Come aside.
Falco.
And I have to say, I haven't really ever gotten tired because it's a solid jam.
Thanks everybody for coming to.
Did we do it? Did we do it? Kyle and Kevin gonna shoot the shit. Put something down. Did we do it? Kevin and Cage coming your way.
Good night, everybody.
Please like and subscribe. Please like and subscribe. It will really help me.